Welcome to this session, which is concerned with technologies, actually a grab bag of technologies in engineering. And I think it's going to be a fascinating section. And Bill Jordan's going to lead off talking about responsible technology or sustainable technology and how he goes about teaching it. So thank you for being here, Bill.
Okay, thank you. My title is Teaching Sustainable Materials Concepts in a Required Engineering Course, and I'm Bill Jordan from Baylor University. The kind of the background of this is I grew interested in sustainable engineering over the last several years. I spent the fall of 2016 on a sabbatical at Villanova looking at sustainable engineering. And last summer I presented at this meeting a Christian approach to sustainable engineering, and I'm going to summarize that in my first three or four slides. This also relates to the paper I presented last month in Salt Lake City at the ASWE meeting, which is incorporating active learning and sustainable engineering concepts into a required materials course. So basically what this is a Christianized version of that, or that's a secular version of this, depending on which way you want to look at it. But I'm going to refer you to that paper for some of the detailed assessment that I did that I don't have time to do in the oral presentation. That should be available by now on the ASWE website. They give away their proceedings electronically, paper by paper. So sustainable engineering, one of the things that's interesting to me is it's only been relatively recent, certainly within my career, that it's gotten into engineering codes of conduct. For example, the ASME code says we shall consider environmental impact and sustainable development the performance of their duties, and that was not in the 1992 version. So I haven't found exactly when it was put in, but sometime in the last 26 years. NSPE code has something similar. It says engineers are encouraged to adhere to the principles of sustainable development, and so on. And this was added in January of 2006. That could lead into a large discussion of the appropriateness of engineering codes and how they reflect changes in engineering, but that's beyond what I want to do now. So what is sustainable development? The NSPE, National Society of Professional Engineers, has this long, complicated one. They talk about providing the challenge to meet the needs of the current era while leaving the resource base essential for future development. And that's true. I have no problem with that definition, except it's hard to explain that to somebody in a short sentence. When I was at Villanova University, they have a very active sustainable engineering graduate program. There aren't very many in the world. And they have defined sustainable development by four words. And I like this definition. It is you're enough, for all, forever. So you're providing enough to meet people's needs. You're providing for everybody in the world, not just the richest part in Western Europe and North America, and you're doing it in a way that you could keep doing this forever. Some Christian aspects I presented, and it was a whole sum of my paper last summer, and I used several sources, including three guys named Francis of Assisi, Francis Schaeffer, and Pope Francis, as well as the Bible. I was surprised how different these three people were, but how similar were their conclusions. So I'm going to give you a quote, I think, from each one of them. Francis Schaeffer wrote in the 1970s, "It's a biblical view of nature that gives nature a value in itself, not to be used merely as a weapon or argument, but a value in itself because God is the one who made it." Respect to dominion, his point is, when we have dominion over nature, it is not ours. He goes on to say, "It's things borrowed or held in trust, which we are to use, realizing they are not ours intrinsically." So we don't own the world. God owns the world, and we are just be given it in trust. Pope Francis, in his book Laudato Si, he quotes St. Francis. He says, "Faithful to Scripture invites us to see nature as a magnificent book in which God speaks to us and grants us a glimpse of his infinite beauty and goodness. Rather than a problem to be solved, the world is a joyful mystery to be contemplated with gladness and praise." And I really like that quote. He goes on to say, "We're not God. The earth was here before we were." And then the second quote, "The responsibility for God's earth means that human beings endowed with intelligence must respect the laws of nature and the delicate equilibria existing between the creatures of this world. The knowledge, I have to tell you who paid for this. This was paid for by the Kern Family Foundation, the work that led to this course. And they're a foundation based in Waukesha, Wisconsin, that supports engineering entrepreneurship, among other things. The learning outcomes that we did put in this course were based on what the Keen Network calls the three C's, which is at the heart of the entrepreneurial mindset, in their opinion. Developing a curiosity in our students, having the students develop connections between various things of how they fit together. And then in the end, at the heart of engineering, is we're creating a value for something. So curiosity, connections, and value, creating value, are how we assessed what I did in this course. So this is a pretty traditional materials book. I've used William Collister, I believe it's in the 9th edition. I think I'm old enough to have used every one of his 9 editions. And I know him, I met him at a number of meetings. About 2 editions ago, he added a chapter on sustainability as the last chapter in the book. Well, you know what frequently happens to the last chapters in the book, is you don't quite get to them. So I made a decision 2 years ago to say, this topic in this book doesn't really depend on the earlier chapters, so we talk about sustainability in the second week of the class to make sure that we are covering it. So I added 2 modules to my class. One of them is to look at baseball bats and why are they made from different materials, and they had to look at performance and sustainability. We had a corrosion project where they looked at things that are corroded on campus. Then they created PowerPoint reports. And with a large class, not everybody presented in spring of 2017, but everybody presented this spring. So let's talk about what I did. Another thing I did is, how do I get good student assessment? What I did is I made an assessment question on the final. They turned in a separate sheet of paper. They didn't write their name on it. They put it in a big envelope, and they wrote their name on the envelope. That way, I got 100% participation. I got really, really honest answers. And if they wrote their name on the envelope, they got full credit for one exam question. So I found that an efficient way to get feedback from students on things you've done in the course. The assessment data is reported in detail in my ASW paper. I did anonymous surveys, and their response to this is the most positive response I've had in anything I've tried in the last 33 years. I mean, the students really love both of these projects. So the baseball bats one looked at, why are baseball bats made from different materials? Using concepts of sustainable materials engineering, we'll explore that topic. What's best from a sustainability perspective? Which ones are best from a performance perspective? One of the things that frustrated my engineering students was the fact that some groups make decisions not based on either of those. You know, I think you make a good case that wooden bats are among the worst ones, but Major League Baseball has made a policy decision. And students need to recognize sometimes decisions aren't based on performance. So I use what's commonly called a jigsaw approach. I devised a group class and a wooden bats expert, composites expert, aluminum expert. And they went out and researched that. Then they came back the next class and we reformed them in teams where there was 2 topical people in each team. So they had 6-person teams where they could each put together things. So in this one, we had groups present initially their findings on their one topic, and then they had to come up with a group. So I'm going to show you just results of one of the group rather than statistical assessment. I wanted to show you actual presentations. So this was where they worked as a materials expert. So this is preserving the format. Other than this, has changed the color to all my slides. Here's someone who presented about pros and cons of an aluminum bat. Advantages is performance. You know, it will perform very well, returns more energy. Now, one of the issues is it's more costly per bat, but if they figure you last longer, it may be cheaper in the long run. Requires a lot of the energy to make it. It's not as traditional as wood. Some people point out that aluminum bats are too good, and lots of little kid leagues don't let you use aluminum bats because they will hit the ball too hard. They said it's really recyclable. It's not going to fracture. So the person who did a composite bat talks about advantages, about its performance, its trampoline effect, how they have higher damping, that which would be good for you. But then you have issues of durability. It gets cold in places where they play baseball, and cotton are very much more expensive to use. And they're certainly harder to recycle. This student didn't say that, but that's true. Then a wooden bat, and again, it's low cost. It's very recyclable. You can't necessarily reuse the broken bat, but you could chop it up into particles and use it somewhere. Disadvantage, it's heavier. It's shorter hit distance. The bats will have more issues like vibration and being breakable. So that's what three of the experts did, and then they came together and said, okay, here's what we're going to look at combined. They said the most sustainable one was wooden. You could grow more bat trees for bats. The most economic, the most sustainable was wood. The most economic was aluminum. And they looked at a number of other factors, and then they made a final recommendation of wood. Now, what I modified this in this spring, this was from spring of 2017. What I did this spring is I said different groups will look at different markets. So what's the best market for Little League? What's the best market for college? What's the best market for Major League Baseball? I mean, the best product. And then they clearly could come up with very different solutions. Corrosion model says, how has corrosion hurt your life? So the students will go out in the community and find something that's corroded. So what we did is I had a short lecture on the 8 forms of corrosion from Collister's text. Students went out in the community in groups and photographed something that's corroded. And one of the things that sometimes frustrates students is to try to do things short rather than long. They had to do on one PowerPoint slide, show the part, describe what form of corrosion it is, and how could they have avoided this corrosion. Now, they did not. Some of the examples I'm going to show you, they didn't come up with the right answer for the corrosion they saw. But that's part of the learning process. So these were, some of these were individual and some were self-selected groups. But here's one, they took a picture of a signpost across the street from the Baylor Science Building. And they said there's a washer there and the green paint has gone away. They suggested this was probably galvanic corrosion. And I wrote back to them when they submitted in Canvas, I could make notes. And I agree, this was probably galvanic corrosion. Okay, here's another one. A section of a fence just outside Harrington House, which is one of the residential areas. They said, this looks like uniform attack corrosion. And I tend to agree with them that this was probably uniform attack corrosion. They said this could be prevented by applying a rust-proof coating, maybe, but also certainly doing a lot more maintenance. Or design it so water won't collect easily on the pipe. So they're beginning to think through sustainability issues as well as resistance to corrosion issues. Here is another one. This was somebody's car. Been driven on salted roads. They said they thought this was erosion corrosion. I don't think it's erosion corrosion at all, given the sort of roads that you have in Waco, Texas that are all paved and that sort of thing. But clearly that is either potentially galvanic or more likely uniform attack corrosion. So I could give them feedback on that. Now, their conclusion, it could have been avoided by washing the car. That might be a very good, useful thing to keep the salt content from building up on it, or maybe putting on a protective coating. So they got that part of it a little bit. Okay, here's someone took a picture about the piping in their shower, in their dorm. And it's a little hard to see in this photograph, but they said there's some uniform attack corrosion along the side of it. That's probably true. They say here, you can't change the environment of a shower. It's going to inherently be wet. But they said maybe use a different material, like a plastic or a coated material, or perhaps the student should dry it or at least clean it after every use rather than just letting it sit. That's probably good advice. I'm not sure students will actually do that part of it. Another one was, this is a bridge over the Brazos River, and some of the piping along the other side of the bridge is corroded. They said this is probably uniform attack corrosion. I tend to agree with that. They said this could have been resisted by using rust-resistant alloy. That's possible, but that would have been very, very expensive. But again, some type of coating. Or maybe sometimes you just agree, I got to replace the pipe on a regular basis. Okay, here's one where students, This was a sewer pipe underneath the Baylor Science Building bridge, the bridge that goes to the science building. So they crawled underneath the bridge and took this photo. And so they saw what they looked like was pitting corrosion. And I'm not sure how, I mean, this looks like pitting. I'm not sure how you get pitting corrosion in that particular environment. But they said they could have chosen a different material, or you could maybe cover the material with a coating, or either a protective coating or the reverse, the galvanic, they use the word galvanic, galvanized, you're putting another corroding material on top of it to corrode instead. So those are various ways that we could do that. So kind of my conclusions from this, on the BATS project, the students were extremely positive. They really enjoyed looking at how you could have different sorts of products. I mean, different sorts of materials make the same product. I continue to do this spring with BATS, but I inspired one of my other professors, Dr. Rylander, liked to go out on canoeing. So he had several groups who would look at, why are there wood canoes and plastic canoes and aluminum canoes? Something I've used as just a demonstration on the first day of class, I think I'm going to make into this project, is usually the first day of class I bring in a beverage, an aluminum can, a plastic bottle, a glass bottle, and ask why are they in all three types. Some of it is behavior, some of it's performance, some of it is aesthetics. I mean, example, I've never seen wine sold in an aluminum can. I'm not going to say it wasn't, but the sort of person who could afford wine doesn't want to drink out of aluminum cans, most likely. So there are some choices that are made that are not just performance-based, and that's frustrating for young engineers to think about, that performance is important, sustainability is important, but with the example of a wine in a bottle rather than aluminum, or the example of Major League Baseball choosing wooden bats even though they're not the best performer. People and groups may make choices that aren't based on performance or sustainability, and you've got to learn to deal with that as an engineer. The corrosion one was also well received. One of the things I think I'm going to do the next time is have some of the groups in reverse to say, go out and find pitting corrosion, or go out and find uniform attack corrosion, or go out and find galvanic corrosion and bring back a photograph. It's interesting with the technology and with the phone, smartphones, photo capability. I was nervous a year and a half ago, would students complain, I don't have a camera. Nobody raised that issue at all. They almost, essentially everybody has a smartphone with a camera capability, which was precise and good enough in this context. In 2017, we had a really big section and we only had some groups present. This year we had everybody present. Half the groups presented about the BATS project and half the students presented about the corrosion projects. So I am excited about making these changes to my materials class because I think it gets the students involved more in the real world. In both cases, it gets them to look at sustainability and how to avoid problems as well. And by giving the intro from a Christian perspective, since we're a Christian university, it adds a dose of how faith can impact choices that engineers make. I think we have time for a few questions.
Thanks, Bill. We have plenty of time.
Go ahead.
Yeah. How do you measure sustainability? I mean, I've done it, but normally how do you guys would teach that?
Well, the answer at this level, we're just trying to get them exposed to it, I'll be honest. So, we haven't really measured it at this level of class. Now, this fall I'm teaching a new technical elective called Corrosion and Sustainable Metallurgy, where I'm going to have to deal with the issue of measuring sustainability. But at this level, I'm satisfied with the students thinking that sustainability is important and what are some of the issues. So I haven't tried to measure it in a numerical sense yet. We'll get to some of that in my new class, still to be worked out.
I mean, there are methods.
Oh, I don't know.
Do they track and map? And actually, the biggest thing from my experience is quality of product.
Yeah.
Because if you do reduce waste,
yeah,
it's 100% right there.
Well, the issue I faced was we're talking sustainability was about one total lecture in this course.
Yeah.
In my course this fall, I'll be able to deal with many of the issues you're talking about. Yeah. Sustainability will be about 50% of the course.
Yeah, go ahead.
phrasing it here. Is that sustainable?
Well, I don't know. We faced that issue. I believe in sustainability, but it was 114 degrees in Waco Monday afternoon. I never had air conditioning on pretty good. I don't know that it is. That's a whole other problem. One of the problems with sustainability in the whole world is the world is getting more affluent on average. And that means there's more demand for energy and more demand for resources, which one of my friends at Villanova says means there's going to be a great demand for engineers who understand sustainability. That's not a real answer, but that's about as good as I can get right now.
Yeah, well, as a homeowner, maintenance is an issue. But how does regular maintenance enter into sustainability?
Oh, it makes a tremendous difference. You could extend the lifetime of a lot of these parks if they've been maintained and been cleaned. So we do talk about that when the students do their reports.
And technologies that don't require as much maintenance.
Yes.
That's what I would like in my home.
Yeah. But again, this is just getting at the very beginnings of it. For the you here and then here.
I just want to make a comment. I'm an ABET evaluator and an engineering technology. One of the changes in ABET this year is that part of the student learning outcomes has to include sustainability. So programs have to demonstrate how that's incorporated into the curriculum and into their learning outcomes within that required curriculum.
I wasn't aware of that. I'm an ABET evaluator for mechanical engineering, and it hasn't hit mechanical engineering, but I think it will very soon.
But it starts this fall.
Well, if you're here, but not in mechanical.
Yeah, you're right.
It's not. But yeah. But I mean, okay. I think it's going to affect the other districts.
First evaluation year is next year.
That's but that, again, that's a work in progress as a professional society has changed their statements of what you need to be able to do.
How would you measure sustainability?
Well,
I can answer that.
You can measure to some extent by, if I just think of the wooden bats, what percentage of the wooden bats actually get ground up and reused in some form versus just thrown away or burnt just to look pretty in a fire, but not for.
Yeah, the instance that I had is we developed a product for McDonald's that eliminated waste of about 20% of their scrap hamburgers.
Yeah.
And we translated that through the number of cows and food and stuff like that to 400 million pounds of CO2 equivalents a year.
Well, you are seeing more and more companies get into it because they're finding out if they're more sustainable, they're going to have less waste and they're going to make more money.
Yeah. But a lot of them do it by energy consumption, and you can balance that way. For ours, it was Teflon-based, so you can calculate the amount of energy that goes into taking the feldspar and making it into Teflon, and then, you know, then all the other process steps and control that on an energy basis.
Well, that's one of the issues, like for aluminum bats, it takes a lot of energy to make that first bat, but to make another bat from that one is not nearly so much energy because you've already refined the aluminum, you're just remelting it and forging or casting it. Was there a question or comment? Yes?
As a school of my high school, looking through colleges, it sounds something that new students would be interested in. So.
Well, thank you. I think it's an important addition to the class.
Great. Any more questions for Bill? If not, let's thank him again. And Richard.
Thank you.